Expressing the views of the United States government.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Concern about threats and security are growing following the attempted assassination of former U.S. President Donald Trump. VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Selden.
Even as U.S. officials, from the president to the director of the FBI, promised to bring all resources to bear in the investigation of the attempted assassination, there's a growing concern about the threats to the U.S. moving forward.
Although the rhetoric regarding threats of violence was already increased online, we're seeing that tick up.
FBI Deputy Director Paula Bate.
We're also focused on the continuing efforts, which were already substantial, given that there are national special security events on the upcoming conventions in Chicago, in Milwaukee, to work with Secret Service in the lead to play our part in protecting the people and the facilities and the events there as well.
U.S. Homeland Security officials have been warning for years that the risk of an attack on a campaign event or a political candidate has been high, with the most likely offender a lone actor motivated by some sort of grievance. Jeff Selden, VOA News, Washington.
Bomb-making materials found in a vehicle at the home of a Trump rally shooting suspect.
The suspect's been identified as 20-year-old Thomas Matthew Crooks of Bethel Park, Pennsylvania. Sources tell the Associated Press bomb-making materials were found inside his vehicle and at his home. At an early morning news conference, Lieutenant Colonel George Bivens, the Pennsylvania State Police Deputy Commissioner, said there was much to learn about the suspect and his motivation.
The single greatest priority would be to identifying a motive and whether there was anyone else involved.
Investigators believe the firearm that Crooks used had been purchased by his father at least 6 months ago. I'm Jackie Quinn.
This is VOA News. Four people were wounded when a suspected attacker rammed into a bus stop in central Israel on Sunday. The incident came amid intensified Israeli operations in Gaza and uncertainty over the progress of truce talks. Rachel Judah reports.
The suspect, who police believe to be a resident of East Jerusalem, was shot and neutralized by security forces at the scene. Here's a Central District Commander, Avi Bitton.
You can see behind me the site of the ramming attack. A terrorist drove this vehicle here, arrived and committed a ramming attack. To our great sorrow, he severely injured three and critically injured one other. I wish a quick recovery to the wounded here.
Police said they were searching the area near the city of Ramla for possible accomplices. Violence has increased in Israel over the course of its military campaign in Gaza against Hamas, which attacked southern Israel on October the 7th.
That is Reuters' Rachel Judah reporting. The new British Foreign Secretary called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza during a visit to Israel in the Palestinian territory Sunday, his second international trip since Labour's resounding victory in elections earlier in the month. David Lammy said the ongoing war in Gaza is intolerable and stressed in meetings with Israel and Palestinian leadership that Britain wants to assist with diplomatic efforts, securing a ceasefire deal and creating the space for a credible and irreversible pathway towards a two-state solution. The Olympic torch made a surprise appearance at France's Bastille Day celebrations on Sunday, AP correspondent Karen Chalmers reports.
Just days before the French capital hosts the Olympic Summer Games, the torch relay joined up with thousands of soldiers, sailors, rescuers and medics marching in Paris beneath roaring fighter jets. The anniversary marks the start of the French Revolution and the end of the French monarchy in 1789. The celebrations offered French President Emmanuel Macron a moment of distraction from recent political turmoil. Recent snap elections have left France with a deadlocked parliament and no one clearly in charge. The Prime Minister could leave office within days, while the left-wing alliance that won the most seats is struggling to agree on a proposed replacement. I'm Karen Chamas.
China and Russian naval forces Sunday kicked off a joint exercise at a military port in southern China Sunday, according to the official news agency, days after NATO allies called Beijing a decisive enabler of the war in Ukraine. The Chinese Defense Ministry said in a brief statement, forces from both sides recently patrolled the western and northern Pacific Ocean, and the operation had nothing to do with the international and regional situations and didn't target any third party. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty, Washington. Today is Monday, July 15, and here are some of the stories we are covering. President Biden calls for national unity in the wake of the attempted assassination of former President Trump.
I want to speak to what we do know. A former president was shot, an American citizen killed, while simply exercising his freedom to support the candidate of his choosing. We cannot, we must not go down this road in America.
Africans react to the attempted assassination of former President Trump. Democratic Republic of Congo says it will not require the withdrawal of the UN peacekeeping forces from its North Kivu province. Most Rwandans will be voting today, Monday, in presidential and parliamentary elections.
Our job is to help Rwandans of goodwill to carry on their civic duty of electing their leaders. Even Rwandans that are living out of Rwanda are given this opportunity to be able to elect their leaders.
And the Kenyan government uses a new mobile application to educate girls about their menstrual health. Those stories for Samson O'Malley's Post are coming up on Daybreak Africa. President Joe Biden on Sunday condemned political violence and called for national unity after an assassination attempt on his rival and presidential challenger, former President Donald Trump. The president spoke from the White House.
My fellow Americans, I want to speak to you tonight about the need for us to lower the temperature in our politics. Yesterday's shooting at Donald Trump's rally in Pennsylvania calls on all of us to take a step back, take stock of where we are, how we go forward from here. Thankfully, former Trump is not seriously injured. I spoke to him last night. I'm grateful. He's doing well, and Jill and I keep him and his family in our prayers. We do not know the motive of the shooter yet. We don't know his opinions or affiliations. We don't know whether he had help or support or if he communicated with anyone else. Law enforcement professionals, as I speak, are investigating those questions. Tonight, I want to speak to what we do know. A former president was shot, an American citizen killed, while simply exercising his freedom to support the candidate of his choosing. We cannot, we must not go down this road in America. We've traveled before throughout our history. Violence has never been the answer, whether it's with members of Congress of both parties being targeted and shot, or a violent mob attacking the Capitol on January 6th, or a brutal attack on the spouse of former Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, or information and intimidation on election officials, or the kidnapping plot against the sitting governor, or an attempted assassination on Donald Trump. There is no place in America for this kind of violence, for any violence, ever. Period. No exceptions. We can't allow this violence to be normalized. You know, the political record in this country has gotten very heated. It's time to cool it down. We all have a responsibility to do that.
President Joe Biden, speaking on Sunday, he condemned political violence. He was speaking from the White House. Africans have been reacting to the attempted assassination of former President Donald Trump. We begin in Zimbabwe, followed by Nigeria, Uganda, and Liberia.
As UNPF, we're very worried about the events happening in America. We hope that there will be no more cases of violence. As Zimbabwe, we had our elections last year. All our candidates participated and they were safe. There were no attempts on any candidate's life. And we also urge the Americans to take a page from this book of our previous elections and try to ensure that cases like this do not occur again within their politics, because it is very sad. And as a mature democracy, we encourage them to ensure that this is not commonplace.
My first reaction when I saw the video of the attempted assassination on former U.S. president was, what is happening to the electoral space in America? Having practiced democracy for, let's say, maybe 200 years now, and you are now seeing that the elections are being marred by violence, chaos, attempted assassination. It's really just discouraging, especially for a lot of countries in Africa or other developing countries who are struggling with democracy, they look up to America as the big brother in terms of democracy. Now it's like taking them many steps backward, because they begin to see that if America can be this way, then it means that in Africa, we can then just do what we want to do in terms of democracy and how it is being practiced.
I was surprised to see that something like that could happen in advanced democracies, unlike the ones we have in Africa. But again, it's the nature of man that sometimes this tendency for violence and other forms of crime and criminality is in us. So I thank God he made it. He didn't die in the shooting. And I wish him quick recovery.
My name is James Kwabo from Zozo Lofa County, Liberia. I feel bad and sad about what has happened, especially looking at the United States that should be considered as a beacon of democracy and tolerance, to see a major political actor with an attempt to assassinate such a character, in my opinion, is a bad signal. It should not be something tolerated in the United States, because other leaders or other intolerant politicians in Africa who likely be capping after them. Because many a times when things happen in these kind of setting, they say, well, it happens in the U.S., and so it can happen this way.
My name is Isang Ronald. We're in Kampala, Uganda. Trump has always talked about a deep state in America, and it is evident that there is a deep state in America. So we pray that he's okay.
This is not the first time we're hearing about gun violence. It appears the number of guns outside in the hands of people is much more than the population, and maybe a lot needs to be done around that area. And also, if people can easily have access to shoot a former president in the United States, what about the ordinary citizen?
I'm called Felix James from Kampala, Uganda. He has so many people who don't like him, so it's hard to tell whether it's from the government or it's from the people who don't like him. But what I can say, it's not easy to attempt to murder a former president of the United States.
You know the problem leaders have when they're in power, they think they are overall. So he is receiving. If you do good, you receive good. If you do bad, you receive bad. So I don't judge him that he did this or that, but they are giving it to him. He is receiving what he did. The service you give out is what you receive.
I'm called Simon. Personally, for me, I don't think it's any good idea to shoot such a person. Though it might be politically motivated, but still I don't feel it's a good idea to shoot such kind of person.
I think this one will give him sympathy votes. It will give him sympathy votes, but I don't know if it was planned by any party or any part, or if it was just the young boy who wanted to make history in his life. So for this time around, it has a bad direction, but I think it will work for Donald Trump as a candidate.
The reaction of some Africans to the assassination attempt on former U.S. President Donald Trump. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, July 15. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Most Rwandans will begin voting today, Monday, in presidential and parliamentary election. President Paul Kagame, who has ruled the country since 2000, is seeking another term. Diaspora Rwandans voted yesterday, Sunday. Arthur Asimwe is the deputy chief of mission at the Rwandan embassy in Washington, D.C. He tells me that those with dual citizenship will allow also to vote.
We have 17, I would say, polling sites across the United States that Rwandans in diaspora are going to be voting from. They're evenly distributed depending on proximity for people, but also depending on the numbers of people in some states.
I'm sure the people have to register to vote. What is the requirement to register?
The final voters registry was out last week, so it's been a process that has been going on for the last, I would say, 2 months. So we have a voters registry for the U.S. Diaspora. So everybody who registered is going to be eligible to vote.
And my question is, I mean, how do you know one is a Rwandan? What about people who have dual citizenship? Are they allowed to vote?
Oh, yes. Rwanda accepts dual citizenship, and most of the Rwandans are going to vote dual citizens of both Rwanda and the United States. Most of them do possess a Rwandan national ID. Every Rwandan, you know, as you know, has a national ID. And if you don't have a national ID, you have a consular card. And the Rwandans in the U.S. are organized in communities with a structured leadership. So we know where all Rwandans are, and we've been approaching them for the last few months, mobilizing them to register and be a part of this national event that is important to our country. So most of them have been mobilized because we know where they are organized under the leadership structures.
I spoke to one Rwandan, and this person is in Europe. I asked if they are going to vote and said, no, there's no need because the process is rigged.
How do you say the process is rigged before it even takes place? Of course, people are entitled to their opinion. Our job is to help Rwandans of goodwill to carry on their civic duty of electing their leaders. And we are happy that even Rwandans that are living out of Rwanda are given this opportunity to be able to elect their leaders. So those that say that the process has been rigged, that's their own opinion. They entitled to their opinion. As far as we know, we have a process that is quite credible.
Arthur Asimwe is the Deputy Chief of Mission at the Rwanda Embassy in Washington, D.C. Sisbert Musa Gampura is the Secretary General of the Ishakwe Rwanda Freedom Movement Opposition Party in exile. He tells me that he did not vote on Sunday because, in his view, the results are predetermined.
I'm not going to vote because I know beforehand that it's rigged, and President Kagame, the incumbent, didn't allow the opposition to take part in the election. So to me, it's just a useless exercise because the results are known beforehand.
But Frank Habineza and another candidate from the opposition are participating.
Those are candidates vetted by the ruling party. Otherwise, we have opposition parties in exile. We weren't allowed to take part into the exercise. So to us, he should not choose which opposition is taking part into the election.
You're saying the government or the election commission is choosing who should, the opposition candidate?
Yes, there are examples of some of members of the opposition inside the country who tried to participate, and they were denied. I know that the commission mentioned that they didn't meet the requirements. So to us, it's arranged, and those who are vetted by the regime are the ones to take part side by side with President Kagame. On the other side, President Kagame has been campaigning using governmental means. So the field is not leveled. To us, it's really a useless exercise. And we don't even understand why the government is spending money when the results are known beforehand.
You said that opposition candidates, some of them inside the country, who are denied participation. I did speak with Madame Ngabiri, and I think the government said that she could not take part because of she had been convicted.
She has been convicted on politically motivated charges, and the African Court for Human Rights has established that she was convicted on the political motives, and that the charges were fabricated in order to deny her the right to take part into the political arena. And there is Diane Rwigara. She tried, and she was told that she didn't meet the requirements. And You remember very well that in the last presidential election, some candidates were jailed after they've tried to compete against Kagame.
But there are going to be international observers.
The international observers, if they are there, they will just be there to stamp what will come out of the ballots. And it's known beforehand, and we don't really understand why members of the international community or those international observers make their trips to Rwanda to observe an election when the results are very well known.
Sizbe Musangamfura is the Secretary General of Ishakwe Rwanda Freedom Movement Opposition Party in Exile. He spoke with us from Finland. The Democratic Republic of Congo says it will now require the withdrawal of UN peacekeepers from its North Kivu province due to the presence of Rwandan forces and Rwanda-backed M23 rebels. The French news agency AFP quotes the country's foreign minister as saying the situation in the east of the country was not conducive for a troop pullout. Reporter Al Katanti Sabeti Jaffa in the eastern DRC city of Goma tells me that the local people there do not approve of an extended stay for the peacekeepers.
The government of the DRC had decided to delay the withdrawal of the peacekeepers from North Kivu and Ituri province of DRC since these two provinces are facing the real problem of security. You know that in eastern Congo, especially in Ituri province and in North Kivu, we have active war, and the group as M23 supported by Rwanda complicated the situation on the Congolese armed forces. And for that, the MONUSCO peacekeepers' help is needed to secure population. So the Congolese Minister of Foreign Affairs, Madame Therese Kayikwamba, announced that MONUSCO will stay a bit more in the eastern DRC to protect civilians and to support FRDC in fighting against the Rwandan army and M23.
The local Congolese were pushing for the gradual withdrawal of MONUSCO. How are they receiving this latest development?
This news is not appreciated by Congolese people, and especially those living in these two provinces, because according to them, MONUSCO is in Congo for two decades and nothing changed. Peacekeepers didn't succeed to protect civilians or to stop war and insecurity. So why MONUSCO will need to stay one more time in Congo since they are not succeeded in their mission of protecting civilians?
Let's assume that MONUSCO stays. What do you think the peacekeepers need to do to please the local Congolese?
Congolese people have been angry with the UN mission since long time. You will remember 2 years ago, there was demonstrations against MONUSCO in all the provinces of the eastern Congo, and many people were killed during this demonstration. This shows that these people are not satisfied by what MONUSCO is doing in the country. And I don't think there is something MONUSCO can do to satisfy these people, except maybe if peacekeepers will be seen fighting against rebels.
That was reporter Jaffa Al-Katanti speaking with us from Goma, Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The Kenyan government is using a new mobile application to educate girls about menstrual health. Through the OKY Kenya app, users can access information on hygiene and other topics. Victoria Amunga reports from Nairobi.
At Kenya's LVCT Health Call Center in Nairobi, workers respond to phone calls and text messages from across the country. They say most of the questions are about reproductive health, especially the menstrual cycle. Menstruation is often shrouded in secrecy and shame in Kenya, according to UNICEF. The agency says teenage girls often look for information about it online, but what they find is not always accurate. To help them, the Kenyan government, UNICEF and LVCT Health created OK Kenya, a mobile app that allows teenage girls to learn about their bodies in private. LVCT Health Counselor Kate Ogutu heads the OK Kenya app desk.
It tells them having your periods, that's a normal thing. It's not something to be ashamed of. They'll be able to know where they can get these products that they need, or also support mentally, because some people don't know when they're having their periods. They will wonder, like, why am I receiving blood?
Cecilia Loku is one of more than 8,000 people using the application. Loku, a mother of one, says her teenage pregnancy could have been avoided if she had received the information available on the app.
If I had that information, like this app, it can predict my periods, my safe days, when I'm ovulating, I will be pregnant or I will be a mother of one right now.
According to several healthcare organizations worldwide, abstinence, refraining from all forms of sexual activity, is the only 100% effective way to avoid pregnancy. Various forms of contraception, such as using birth control pills or condoms, also greatly reduce the odds of conception. OK Kenya users can not only track their menstrual cycles on the app, but also text or call mentors and learn about reproductive health rights. Kate Kiema is Director of Programs and Impact at She's the First, a US-based girl support organization that works in Kenya and supports the app. She says innovation such as the app is needed in a society that shies away from discussing sexual and reproductive health.
Mentors are particularly shy to talk to girls about whether it's puberty or whether it's about menstrual hygiene. So you can imagine if a girl is coming from a community who thinks...
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with football. Egypt under 23 team were held to a 1-1 draw by Ukraine in France on Sunday as both teams prepared to participate in the football event of the upcoming Olympic Games. Next, Egypt will face Iraq in another friendly match, which will also take place in France on Wednesday. These warm-up matches provide essential opportunities for the team to fine-tune their strategies and build cohesion before the Olympics. Egypt has been drawn into Group C for the Olympic Games alongside Spain, the Dominican Republic, and Uzbekistan. Staying with preparations for the Olympics, but in table tennis, Nigeria's Aaron Akwadri is expected to be drawn by in the first round of the men's table tennis singles event of the Paris 2024 Olympic Games based on his current rankings as the draws for the table tennis event approach. Aaron and Egypt's Omar Assar stand out as part of the 16 top seeds who have qualified for this year's event. Aaron, who made history as the first African to reach the quarterfinals of the table tennis event at the Rio Olympic Games in 2016, currently holds the 19th world ranking, while Assar, who is the second African to reach the quarterfinals, is rated 22nd in the world. The official seedings for the games will be based on the July 16th ITTF world rankings. Elsewhere in Southern Africa, Zambia flyweight female boxer Margaret Tembo has described her universality slot allocation to the Paris 2024 Olympic Games by the Olympic Games Tripartite Commission as an honor. Margaret Tembo is set to enter the record books as the first female Zambian boxer to participate in the Olympic Games. Tembo was handed the universality slot due to her recent impressive performances, including winning bronze at the All African Games. She will be competing in the 48 to 50 kilograms category.
Me qualifying to the Olympics, it has really brought a lot of joy. I think in me, my family and my coaches also, it's really meant a lot to me going to the Olympic Games.
And in athletics, the entry list for the Paris 2024 Olympic Games have been published, featuring the names of athletes who intend to compete in the French capital when athletics takes place between the 1st and 11th of August. Athletes from some 200 teams will compete across the program of 48 events, which includes 23 women's disciplines and 23 men's disciplines, as well as two mixed events, the 4x400 meters mixed relay and the marathon race walk mixed relay. Kenyan Faith Kipyegon are among the world record holders who return, targeting back-to-back Olympic title triumphs. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday.
And that's it for this Monday, July 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.